Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. There are just way too many good blogs and articles out there to possibly read them all. Thankfully, there's a new app called Colony FM, which uses voice actors to narrate great articles and blog posts. Whether you're in the car, in the office, washing dishes, or just hanging out, nothing is easier or more soothing than having a real person do your reading for you. Go to colony.fm/hack right now to get the service completely free. It's available on the web, on the App Store, and in the Google Play Store. That's colony.fm/hack.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It is so very cool of you to join me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a former marketer for American Express, an advocate for elevating the stature of tradespeople, and a brilliant, brilliant entrepreneur. 5 short years ago, my guest spent 6 hours a day sitting in meetings. She worked for American Express creating their customer loyalty programs. But today, she is the founder and CEO of Checklist Home Services, Citibin, and Reclaim a Space. Each of these companies works hand in hand with each other and works to deepen the relationship to her customers. Now, let's hack. Liz Picarazzi. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Fizzle, honest online business training for aspiring entrepreneurs. Fizzle is the best place on the web to get in-depth training on how to build an independent business from scratch. Their small business roadmap is the step-by-step plan every entrepreneur wishes they had when they were getting started, and it's divided into 3 phases. Phase 1, how to come up with a great business idea and launch your business. Phase 2, how to go from zero income to making enough money to pay your bills and support your family's basic needs. And then phase 3, how to grow your business into a team and brand that will outlast you, or maybe just a healthy company that provides a great life for you and your family. And the best part is, every listener of Hack the Entrepreneur is eligible for a 5-week free trial of Fizzle to see if it's right for you. Visit fizzle.co/hack to get your 5-week in-depth training on how to build an independent business from scratch for free. That's fizzle.co/hack for your 5 weeks of free training. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have another very, very special guest. Liz, welcome to the show.
Hi, John.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun, so we should jump straight into this.
Great.
Liz, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
So the one thing that I do differently, and I really only have this awareness now that I'm a little older in my 40s, is that I have an awareness of what makes me happy. And I think that's something that as human beings with a lot of cultural expectations, that it's hard to define what makes you happy. You know, you've got your family, you've got society, you know, there's expectations coming at you from every which way. And that makes it very hard to discern what makes you happy, whether it be your career, your personal life. And so I've really been able to kind of develop a muscle where I can see what makes me happy. And it's kind of like about flow. Like, I know there's that, I think, Hungarian philosopher, psychiatrist who wrote a book called Flow and talked about how you kind of like don't know it until you're into it, but it's really a state of kind of bliss and being present with what you're doing, what you're thinking, and really kind of bringing together your heart, your hands, and your head. And you know, I went through many years of not having that flow, feeling that flow. And then when I found it, I realized that was kind of the key to happiness and realized, you know, how that would affect my decisions personally and professionally.
I love it.
That's such an excellent answer. And so when you mention how you found it in your 40s, so is this like, did you just start looking for it in your 40s, or you know what I mean? Like, is this tied to anything where I know lots of, especially entrepreneurs, that maybe we don't go for the big sort of prizes and the big goals and the big dreams in our life sometimes because of the people around us will look at it wrong or look at it in a negative way. And that kind of stops us.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the context you mean? And now you just kind of know what you need to do.
So I would say I kind of figured it out in my late 30s when I was working in a corporate job and I had really checked off all of my major goals in life. You know, so I got married, you know, I became a mother, got an MBA, you know, had a good paying job, bought a house, had a mortgage, you know, lived in a wonderful city. I live in Brooklyn, you know, have a great community, had wonderful, wonderful things. But at the end of the day, I still felt like it wasn't complete. Like I had done all the things that I had prescribed to myself, which was probably kind of a byproduct of what others prescribed for me throughout my life. And I still didn't have that completely great fulfillment. There was something missing. And what I identified it as was kind of not having my heart, my head, and my hands in unity. So as a knowledge worker, and I worked in American Express, big corporation, you know, in a cubicle, lots of meetings, lots of conference calls. I was in my head. I was a knowledge worker. I was not oftentimes working with my heart, or I had to suspend my heart in order to just get the job done. And so I kind of realized that this is sort of my heart and my head were not in unison. And then a catalyst event was when I bought a house and I did a lot of the work on my house myself. I found such joy in working with my hands. And suddenly I had like this kind of triad of, you know, working with my hands, my heart, and my head. And so for me, that was where I found that flow. And that was in my late 30s. And then I made some big decisions about my career, ended up leaving corporate, starting my business, which happens to be in home improvement. And so, you know, it kind of comes back to, you know, cultivating that awareness of what made me happy. But it took many years of kind of working for the man, working in other contexts, to realize I didn't have all the pieces that I wanted.
Wow. So starting your business is now the way to connect those three things, the heart.
It is. Yes.
And your head. But was there, like, there's a real disconnect, obviously, between working in marketing for American Express and doing like home services and handyman work.
Yep.
In New York. What was the feeling like within you, either in your head or just like in your gut, between that disconnect? The idea that, Liz, how can you possibly go from a knowledge worker in an office to now running like a physical hands-on business?
So I would say the connection point is that, you know, I still am fundamentally a business person, an entrepreneur, a marketer. And when I was doing that work in my own house, I realized that other kind of professional, very busy New Yorkers didn't have the skills or the time to do that work. And that there was like a real gap for professional tradespeople, professional handymen in my market. And that there was an opportunity for me to connect this great, you know, experience I was having working with my hands and, you know, the end product of, you know, a really great polished, you know, home to people that otherwise, you know, wouldn't have it. They wouldn't know who to hire. They wouldn't know how to do it themselves. They wouldn't know who to trust. You know, just about everybody who's hired a contractor has had a negative experience. So I felt like it was my way to deliver that kind of unexpectedly professional experience in home services to people that were like my own self, like I'm my own target demographic. And that's really where the connection was. It was kind of applying professionalism to the trades. And, but it took me getting my own hands in the work to recognize that gap.
Yeah. And so those are the two things that I really love about your story is that first and foremost, you are an entrepreneur and a marketer. You don't have to be the person who's doing this. You found sort of a demand in a marketplace and you are the target demographic, which is the other thing I like. And so you know that you just inherently, you're not the only one like you in Brooklyn that has this issue. And so you just decided to fix it for yourself and fix it for others.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, create a business out of it. That's all it takes, right?
Yep.
I love that.
And that's the same story with Citibin too, actually.
Oh, right. So, and Citibin's your other company.
Yeah. So Citibin is kind of a child of Checklist Home Services. And they're high-end enclosures for trash cans and recycling bins. So I never would have thought that I would go from the 34th floor of the American Express Tower next to Ground Zero to building trash enclosures in my backyard. But that progression really took like less than a year.
Wow.
And it was like Checklist. It was an unmet need that I personally had. And that, you know, when I started seeing the need and I would walk around my neighborhood and I would see overflowing trash and, you know, in front of otherwise very lovely homes, it was, again, it was a disconnect. Like, why in the world hasn't someone solved this? Like, kind of like, why in the world can't I get a handyman and come and change this faucet for me? Why is it such an ordeal? So, you know, Citibin was the same thing. It came from my own kind of unmet need. And then, you know, combined with a joy of making things and making things for other people, it pulled it all together.
I love the idea of walking around, seeing this sort of unmet need that you personally have, but is it just an internal like process? Like, or do you do any research? Do you think of like, how far do you take it before you decide that, yes, I'm going to start a whole new company now called Citibin? Because I know like a lot of people get stuck in that sort of what business to start or what to do. And now you have two based on an unmet need. But is that literally where it ends? And then you just try it in a small way and then see if you can scale it?
Well, luckily, my businesses relate so closely to each other. So the first prototype was with one of my very best clients for Checklist Home Services. So we go and we work at her house every month, every other month or so. And she had overflowing trash. You know, she had strollers cluttering her front area, lives in a beautiful brownstone in Park Slope, Brooklyn. And so I just pitched it to her. I said, this is something I've been thinking about. You've mentioned you need it. Will you be our guinea pig? And she was delighted to do that. And so I actually got my own client to fund something that was an idea percolating in my head. And then that was the first of many prototypes. I mean, I think we're into our 12th major iteration with lots of mini iterations along the way of the Citibin trash enclosure. But it wasn't like created kind of as a total separate thing from Checklist because I already had a very strong client base that trusted me and like me had trash problems. So, you know, it's all within like the same industry. It may not seem immediately connectable, but it actually is completely, and it makes my job selling a lot easier because I can do a lot of cross marketing.
Which is essential. Again, this is something that we've heard so many times, but to actually hear it in real practice is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You had an ideal customer. They had another need that you could then pitch to them and see if they would buy it.
Yes.
That's so simply brilliant. I love it. So are you or would you look for further things? Like, is this something that you kind of actively do now? Like, you have this ideal client and now they use your handiwork services, they use your Citibins. Is there like, do you like look around like, what else does this person need that I could provide that kind of falls into this? It's disconnected, but not disconnected. Like it seems like it is at first.
Mm-hmm.
Do you try and sort of like that lifetime value of a customer? Are you trying to like get that deeper and deeper and deeper? Or do you think that's gone far enough?
There is. And I didn't really crystallize like what was the main kind of gist, the main kind of thrust of the businesses that I'm starting until probably in the last year. And I realized that it really has to do with city living and how to make it better. So it's hard to find a handyman in New York City. We all work so much. It's hard to trust people. You know, so that was checklist. So that was all about kind of the time and the trust element. With CityBin, it was really about space for your trash and kind of the very contradictory eyesore that you have trash in front of your really nice house. Now, another city problem that people have is just space optimization generally. You know, we live in very small homes. We need to make the best use of our space. And so I don't want to say I'm starting a third business, but I kind of am. But it may actually end up being the parent over everything else. And that's, it's called Reclaim a Space. And it's really about kind of optimizing space in your home, whether it be closets, it may be the city bin that you have outside because you're optimizing your outdoor space that you've already paid for with the expensive real estate in New York. It may be that you have another child and you suddenly need to figure out how to make a bedroom where there isn't one. There's all sorts of stuff that you can do with space optimization that makes maybe a desire that you may have to move out to the suburbs because you want more space, it can actually go away. And that happened to me. I mean, I had a desire to move out to the burbs to have a bigger house. And then I actually just started going behind my walls and finding places I could make closets and shelves and built-ins. And that, again, it was like a crystallizing moment where I'm like, this is another business idea. It's related to my first two businesses. It has the exact same customer who's short on space and who's short on time. And it's called Reclaim a Space.
Wow. And then so obviously with Reclaim a Space, then Checklist Home Services can also do the work. Probably.
Exactly.
And then it you is. Might need a city bin to do it.
Yeah. So I can actually use the same labor on all three things. And I take that into consideration when I hire people and when I train people is, you know, could they work in the shop building trash enclosures as well as they can go and paint someone's, you know, living room? You know, I don't always find the perfect, you know, mix, but it is something I'm looking for. I have an eye for that when I'm interviewing candidates.
Yeah, I love your idea of rather than just always actively looking for new customers for Checklist Home Services, you are branching out, going deeper, increasing that lifetime value again from those customers. So therefore you generate more revenue just like that with customers that are already happy with you, but then finding other ones that work as kind of a funnel, if you want, that will bring more people into your other companies.
Yep.
Wow. Wow. It's brilliant. That's really, really smart. I love it.
But I kind of accidentally came into it. It was not like a master plan. And,
well,
you know,
it never is.
And I love yeah. It. But that kind of, I had a vision, but the lack of kind of integrated plan causes downstream issues. So like, for instance, do I have three separate email lists now that I kind of have three separate businesses, but yet they're all similar clients? You know, so my email marketing kind of feels like it's having an identity crisis, or even my books or my insurance policy or my CRM. So those sorts of how do the businesses fit together? It's like, I still have to work through that. And that's like for this year in 2016, that is really my main objective is how to tie it all together, the infrastructure of all three things together. So it not only makes sense for my team, but I'm not causing brand confusion among my clients.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a wow. So because it's kind of come, like you said, not as like a master plan, it just kind of evolved like this. And now you have this three separate businesses that are actually one. And I guess, and that's probably why when you said Reclaim a Space and you prefaced it with this might be like the umbrella over it all. That's cool. That's smart. And I love that you use email marketing actively in a completely offline business.
Yes.
I guess yeah. You learned that within American Express.
Yeah. I mean, I think email marketing is remains really one of the best ways to reach people.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So at the beginning, Liz, you said that your one thing is that you know what makes you happy. And every expert talks about this whole 80-20 rule in business. So you're supposed to do 20% of the work and you'll get 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at and you're supposed to delegate the rest. So Liz, could you tell me something within your business that you are absolutely not good at?
Bookkeeping, accounting, anything having to do with insurance, anything having to do with contracts, anything administrative. I have like an abnormally negative reaction to those things. And I don't know exactly what it is. I mean, I think it is that I'm an entrepreneur. I'm an idea person. I get really, really excited about new ideas, and especially the beginning stages. But when it comes to like the details and, oh, taxes, putting together my taxes, I don't like it. It makes me feel really lousy. It makes me actually feel like I'm not an entrepreneur when I'm doing those things. It may be very juvenile to say that, but, and for the first few years, I did all the bookkeeping myself, but I realized it was kind of killing the joy in what I was trying to create. And so I did delegate, and I hired just the most amazing office manager who does just about everything I don't like to do. She's Superwoman. I mean, she does all the bookkeeping, all the invoicing, the tax paying, customer service answering. I mean, she does everything, and she does the things that I'm not good at. She's very well organized. I don't consider myself to be a super organized person. And so, you know, I delegate that. I mean, and then the second major chunk that I delegate is the actual handyman carpentry work. I can do it, but does it make sense for me to do it when there's all these really great guys I've hired to be able to do it? So I delegate that. And, you know, that is very vulnerable because a lot of times when people start a business, they can work in the business and on the business. They can do both of them if they put their mind to it. For me, I really can't always be working in the business because my technical skills are not as good as the guys that I hire. And that can be really vulnerable because my brand's on the line. If I hire someone that goes out and steals something, which luckily has never happened, or does a poor job, you know, within minutes, it's going to be on Angie's list. And so being forced to delegate the core activity of my business, which is the handyman work, is still kind of terrifying, but it's the fact that I delegate it that's made my business so successful.
Yeah, I think that's what most, especially in your business, the contracting business, it's most people, because they are contractors and then they try and create a business around it, mm-hmm. they never can seem to pull themselves out of it.
Yeah.
Which you seem to be forced to do. Did that not like put a, like, were you not scared or like worried about the fact of even like pricing jobs at first? And maybe not knowing the exact process that would go through, like the employee would go through to do everything. Was that hard? Was that something, or were you just kind of went with it and kind of learned as you went?
I definitely learned as I went, especially in my first year. I did a lot of work to figure out what would be the scope of our work. Like, were we a handyman company or were we a general contractor? And partly because of the difficulty of accurately estimating work, I firmly decided that we're a handyman company. We don't do any major renovations, remodels, because it's easier for us to focus on that thing that's is missing in the marketplace. And it's easier for us to price those jobs, you know, on a time and materials basis. And so we've gotten really good at estimating. But it did take a while to get to that, like our methodology. And we've tweaked pricing here and there, but really the core kind of product for us is the handyman for a day. You know, we used to charge hourly and learned that didn't work so well because then people would get really like picky about, well, was it 4 hours or 5 hours? And that's not very inefficient from a scheduling perspective. So once we productized our service and we made it handyman for a day, it also kind of strengthened our brand as a handyman company.
Wow. You productized it. That's brilliant. I love
it. Thank you.
So you, mm-hmm. so like they, you get this handyman for the whole day, and you probably have like a, like fill out this list of what you want done sort of in priority, and then they just get to it.
Yeah. And we have, I mean, it flows all the way through, you know, all of our marketing touch points. Our website has a really cool quote request form where it's, they can fill out in every room in their home what they need to have done. And then that gets sent to us. It gets sent to our CRM. It goes in for quoting. You know, when I first started, it was just kind of me walking around with like a little notebook and a measuring tape. And, you know, now it's a lot more slick.
Wow. That's impressive. Like I come from this whole contracting world. I kind of grew up in it.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I'm really interested in it, and I see it. And now I'm obviously have nothing to do with it anymore, but I know sort of, I know the limits that are usually put on by themselves, by contracting companies, because it's usually that person walking around with a book, and it's never, I love that you've done it in a way that can scale. So have you, do you have this in your vision of scaling from New York City to all across America?
So the risk of repelling potential investors, the answer to that is actually no.
Okay.
I think that the New York market is so huge as it is, and we are just dipping our toe into it, and we're doing gangbusters. So I know how hard this business can be to hire the right employees and to train them and the liability that's on the line. I actually wouldn't want to put my brand in another state for this business, not knowing for sure that that person, like let's say as a franchisee, would be successful at it. I just feel like the marketplace here is so huge and it's so needed that focusing just, you know, right now we're just Brooklyn, Queens, and Manhattan. I can see us expanding out to like Westchester County, Connecticut, and New Jersey. But that would be the next step before we would start selling franchises nationwide.
Nice. Very, very well thought out answer and very smart. I love it. It's true. It's your brand that's going to do it for you. And it's, you have such a huge market that you really don't need to. I love it. I love it. All right, Liz, this has been a lot of fun. I want to wrap up on one final question for you. So since American Express and having that sort of crisis, I guess, where you realize you were only working with your head. And now to what you've created with CityBin, with Checklist NYC, and then also what you're going to be creating with Reclaim a Space. You've come a long ways. You've learned a lot. But I know as entrepreneurs, we have this thing where we're always projecting our success into the future. So in 3 months, when you hit that revenue goal, you'll be successful. In 6 months, when Reclaim a Space is a hit, you'll be successful. Yet right before you get there, we set loftier goals into the future. And we always live in this gap where we never see ourselves as successful no matter what we accomplish. I would love right now, Liz, if you could stop and look behind you at everything you've done since American Express to now. And just tell me the wins, the losses, the highs, the lows, how you feel about your entrepreneurial journey up until today.
So it's a great question. You know, on days when, let's say we have a customer complaint that I feel lousy about, you know, I'll think, oh my God, we suck. We haven't figured out this process. I hired the wrong person, blah, blah, blah. You know, in that just single moment, it doesn't feel that great. But when I pull together all of my employees for a party at the end of the year to celebrate all of our successes, whether it be our great online customer reviews or our revenue growth or just the, you know, the camaraderie we've developed, the systems, just where we've come, I am incredibly proud of that. And it does take those moments where I gather people together for a party or read an online review for me to remember, wow, only 5 years ago, I was sitting in a cubicle and I was on conference calls for 6 hours a day and I was miserable. And now I have this awesome company with real employees and I'm creating jobs. I'm fulfilling a need in the marketplace. I've learned a ton along the way. You know, that really shows me, you know, how big we're becoming, and the vision is becoming bigger as we go too. So you know, the initial vision of just, oh, I'll have a handyman company. I want people to have a handyman the way I didn't, you know, back then, is now like, it could become like a home services empire, honestly, if I thought really big about it. So yeah, I would say that is the gap that I don't always recognize, but I am, when you ask that sort of a question, I become present to how far we've come.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you should, because you've accomplished a ton. Like you said, just 5 years ago, you were spending 6 hours. I would say wasting 6 hours a day in meetings.
But yes.
We'll decide to keep it positive. All right, Liz, we've got to talk about your business in passing, but could you specifically tell the listener where to find out more about you and your business, please?
Sure. So Checklist Home Services is the handyman business, and you can find us at checklistnyc.com, where you'll also find that nifty-difty quote request form I mentioned. Our city bin trash enclosures are at citybin.com, which is spelled CITIBIN.com. And if you also want to learn about City Bin, there was an awesome article about City Bin in the New York Times on December 18th. Called Trash Never Looks So Stylish. And that is driven, that's given us a lot of traffic to our own website. And Reclaim a Space, it is yet to be launched, but we do have the domain Reclaim a Space, and that is going to be launching in the second half of 2016.
That's awesome. And social media?
Checklist NYC on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, I believe, as well. Not as active, but yes.
Excellent. So Checklist NYC on Twitter and Facebook. I'll link to those in the show notes, as well as checklistnyc.com, citybin.com. I will find that New York Times article and link to it. And the book Flow, I'm going to find from that Hungarian philosopher. I will also link to that in the show notes for everyone. So once you're done driving or working out, whatever it is you're doing right now, you can easily track those things down and reach out to Liz and check out her businesses, because she's really, really, really impressive. So Liz, thank you again so much for joining me today. Thank you for taking the time. And please just keep doing what you're doing, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Wonderful. Thanks, John. Thanks for the invitation. And I'm a listener of your podcast, and it's such an honor to be a guest.
Oh, thank you.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I really, really, really enjoyed that conversation with Liz. And as I said to Liz, and I'll say to you now, is that I grew up in that contracting business, that whole like handyman and stuff. And so I understand there's such a demand and there's such a big gap in the market between just people who just kind of do it. They know how to sort of like swing a hammer or twist a wrench. And so they just start quote unquote business, but it's really one person just doing that thing. And I love how Liz has kind of taken herself out of it. And as she says, she's a marketer and an entrepreneur. I love that. And she's really just, she's doing so awesome with it. And I think that she's setting herself up to fill a huge, huge need in the market. And I mean, anybody out there listening, she doesn't want to go across America with this. I mean, if you, whatever city you live in, and if you work in this, or if you feel like you could work in this industry, I mean, she's a great company and business and systems already in place that are there. I mean, you could emulate those. It's there. Sorry, Liz, but I don't think you want to go across. But this is how it works, right? Build off somebody else's idea and take it to a new market. That's how business works. That's a great way to think about it. But I really, really enjoyed the conversation. And Liz said a lot of smart things. So I went back and listened. And I needed to find something that she said. And there was 7 things she said. So I went back and listened, and I got it down to 5. Then there was 4, and then there was 3. The next time I listened, there was 2 things Liz said, and then I got it down to 1. This one thing that Liz said that I just couldn't get out of my head, that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
But when it comes to like the details and, oh, taxes, putting together my taxes, I don't like it. It makes me feel really lousy. It makes me actually feel like I'm not an entrepreneur when I'm doing those things. It may be very juvenile to say that, but, and for the first few years, I did all the bookkeeping myself, but I realized it was kind of killing the joy in what I was trying to create. And so I did delegate, and I hired just the most amazing office manager who does just about everything I don't like to do.
And that's the hack. Liz, 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 I love this. And no, it's not juvenile. It's not at all. This is an amazing thing to realize and to not let it just kill the joy in what you're creating, but that kills the business. It really, really does. And so many people get weighed down thinking that because it's juvenile, that you need to somehow grow up and around, like, and somehow overcome that feeling. And no, you don't have to just get rid of that feeling and delegate that out to somebody else. Because you're right, as entrepreneurs, oftentimes we are idea people. We love sort of coming up with an idea and getting it going and the creation process. And yes, you did have to do it for a couple of years. And we do have to do things in our business sometimes that we don't like because we don't have somebody in place. But don't let it kill that joy to the point where it kills your inspiration to continue to grow and build something really, really meaningful. That's what you don't want to do. And so I love how Liz has kind of struggled with this, and she's okay saying it, but she knows that it might sound weird, but it doesn't sound weird. It sounds like somebody who is very self-aware and very much knows where she's good, where she's not so good, and just not worrying about the stuff that she doesn't have to be good at the business side, the insurance side, all the technical detail stuff. She doesn't have to be good at that at all. What she has to be good at is what she's good at, which is coming up with new ideas for completely new businesses like CityBin, and then also marketing and growing the business in that way. And I absolutely love that because this is essential for your growth as well. Thank you, Liz. All right. That was a blast. Thank you so very much for taking the time to stop by. I really, truly do appreciate it. When you get a chance, go to hacktheentrepreneur.com and get on the email list. My best work is going out every Sunday morning. And I would love for you to be a part of it. It's a lot of fun over there, you know. Check it out. It'll be good. And yeah, Liz's episode will be up by the time this goes out. So you can check out Liz and check out her business. If you live in New York, check out what she's doing. It's really, really, really interesting. I'm really impressed. So hacktheentrepreneur.com when you get a chance. And yeah, thank you so much for taking the time. It's really appreciated. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.